And welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks for tuning into our show. As part of this week's Candidates Week here on WYPR, we're going to devote both hours of today's Midday to the race for Maryland Attorney General. The Republican and Libertarian candidates are running unopposed in next week's primary election, so we'll be talking exclusively with the three Democratic candidates running to replace outgoing Attorney General Doug Gansler as Maryland's top legal officer. Doug Gansler, of course, a Democratic candidate for governor, also in the primary next Tuesday. And Doug Gansler will be here on the Midday Show on Friday. The Attorney General's office has numerous divisions, about 44 positions, and a budget of $5.6 million. We pay Maryland's Attorney General $137,500 a year. It's a four-year term, and there are no term limits on the Attorney General's office. Brian Frosch will be joining us. He represents Montgomery County in the state Senate as a private law practice in Bethesda. He's one of the candidates. He'll be with us later on during the 2 hours of Midday. And we'll also be joined by State Delegate John Cardin from Baltimore County. And he is also a candidate, also has a law practice in Baltimore City. He'll be joining us. But up front, we talk with Delegate Aisha Braveboy. Delegate Braveboy represents Maryland's 25th District. That's in Prince George's County. She serves also as chair of the Legislative Black Caucus, and she's a lawyer with Gabriel J. Christensen and Associates, and she's been in elected office for 8 years, and joins us now to talk about her candidacy for Attorney General. Delegate Braveboy, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourselves for voters here, citizens in the Baltimore area may not be familiar with you because you've been serving Prince George's County all these years. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, I was born actually in Washington, D.C., but raised primarily in Prince George's County. And I attended Prince George's County Public Schools. I went to the University of Maryland at College Park for undergrad, and then Howard University School of Law. And as you mentioned, I've been a practicing attorney for nearly 14 years. And my primary focus is real estate and corporate law. However, for the past 10 years, I've been pro bono counsel to a juvenile diversionary program that has successfully diverted over 3,000 young people out of the criminal justice system. And I've also represented families facing foreclosure on a pro bono basis. So in addition to my legal work, at my office, I volunteer my time outside in my community because it's just so important and there's such a need.
I'm interested in your legal career since this is the Attorney General's office that you're running for.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit more about after law school, what kind of work did you do in the law?
Sure. I initially worked for the Federal Communications Commission, where I worked on spectrum auctions, as well as rulemaking. And one significant one that I worked on is one that dealt with the deployment of wireless telecommunication services on Native American reservations. And though my name is Braveboy, I'm not Native American. My father's from the Caribbean. I took great pride in my work on behalf of the Native American community here in this country. So initially I started out working for the Federal Communications Commission. I then worked for Prince George's County government doing policy work. And that incorporated a variety of aspects of the law from development to procurement, you name it. After that, I worked for the Anacostia Waterfront Corporation, in-house counsel there, did a lot of work on development, sustainable development along the Anacostia River, and that was extremely rewarding because you've probably been to D.C., you've seen sort of the transition of Southwest. It is quite amazing. It was wonderful to be a part of that transition. But what was so significant is that we were really focused on ensuring that we protected the environment, and that we had smart growth along the NFIPS.
Interesting experience, interesting background. What led you to the state legislature? What made you decide to run for the House of Delegates?
Well, when I was working for Prince George's County Government, I did a lot of work with homeowners associations and civic associations, and I helped to train board members. I, you know, educated them on their rights and responsibilities as members of their boards of directors, and they're all volunteer boards. And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, folks have really good intentions but make some mistakes that they wouldn't make if they had the appropriate counsel. So I would always, even though that wasn't, you know, in my, you know, job, you know, description, I really care about the community that I live in. And so I did that. And so when current Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown decided to run for Lieutenant Governor, he was a delegate in my district, and I was well represented, but he was moving on. And I decided, along with several members of the community, that the best person to run and hopefully win a seat would be me. And that's why I decided to run, and I was so grateful to have the support of civic and community leaders. And I never forgot them. And each year, since I've been elected, I've hosted a homeowners association conference where I bring homeowners associations from around the county together. And we've also had participation from folks outside of Prince George's County, actually, because there are not a lot of conferences that really give those members who are serving on their boards of directors the tools they need to effectively manage and run their communities. And that's so important to me that I decided to make that a big part of my service as a delegate.
Delegate Aisha Brayboy is our guest here on Midday by Phone. She is a candidate in the Democratic primary for Attorney General of Maryland. If you have a question for her while she's with us, 410-662-8780. Or submit a question for her or for the other candidates. I can ask the same question all three today during the 2 hours of our show. Send it in by email, folks, midday@wypr.org. And Delegate Brayboy, I just want to go over something with you, the scope, the size of the Attorney General's office in Maryland. I was looking at the Maryland manual earlier just to see, you know, what the budget is for that office. And this looks like, I think I said $5.6 million. That was fiscal year 2014 appropriation for the Attorney General's office. But furthermore, the Director of Communications there says that there are 723 staff positions, nearly 500 attorneys and contract attorneys, and then there's the support staff. Those numbers sound about right to you? This is a pretty big law firm you'd be taking over.
Many of the attorneys are working in agencies and boards and commissions in the executive branch of government. So there's an office on St. Paul Street in Baltimore City,
right,
that's the primary office for the Attorney General. But again, because the Attorney General's office services the executive agencies, you have to have attorneys assigned and located within those agencies. So, yes, it's a pretty big law firm, but it's a great opportunity to really deliver justice to the people of Maryland. And in recruiting and retaining those attorneys who are solely focused on that, who have a mission, who went to law school with, and wanted to practice for a purpose. And this is an opportunity for them to really deliver justice, equality, and fairness for the state of Maryland. And when I become Attorney General, I'm looking to, like I said, recruit and retain those individuals that share that desire and goal.
I want to ask you this question. It's kind of an ideological question. I ask almost every candidate who comes on the air, why they're a Republican, why they're a Democrat, why an independent, if we ever get an independent in here, but they don't have independents in the primary. What makes you What makes you a Democrat? What made you decide to become a registered Democrat and then run for office as a Democrat?
Sure. Well, for many, I guess, of us, you know, we first get into politics, I think, by talking to our parents. And my parents at a very early age, you know, we read the newspaper together. They took me to go vote with them. They really instilled in me the value of being a part of the process, of the democratic process. And I mean democratic in terms of how we vote and how decisions are made, not necessarily the party, but the process. And then, you know, I did my research. You know, I researched the parties. I think I was probably, I turned 18 back in 1992. And so right before I registered, I did my research on the parties. Of course, my parents are registered Democrats as well. But, you know, I'm open. I want to be open-minded. And I felt that the values of the Democratic Party aligned well with my own personal values. And that's why I decided to register as a Democrat. But though I'm a registered Democrat, you know, the Attorney General is here not just to represent one party, but to represent everyone. And in that vein, I'd like to say that though I am a registered Democrat, I don't simply vote along party lines on bills. I don't simply make decisions based on a partisan interest. I really make decisions based on the interests of people and of the values that I hold dear. So, you know, we don't have to make a selection. We can be independent, too. But we all make a choice in what party we want to affiliate with. And I think that my affiliation with the Democratic Party represents the issues that are promoted by the party, the majority of them that I agree with and I support.
Why are you running for Attorney General? Here's your chance to tell our listeners in Baltimore why you've chosen to seek this office.
Thank you. You know, I chose to seek this office because throughout my tenure as a delegate, I have really worked hard on many issues that impact the civil rights of people. Everything from education to voting rights and things like that. And as a legislator, I know that I can pass bills and I can argue bills on floor and I can, you know, help stop really bad bills that hurt people. But as the Attorney General, I can execute. I can actually deliver justice. I can stand up for people. I can represent the people of the state. And that's what I want to do. And I'll give you a couple of examples. You know, we have the state of Maryland has unfortunately lost a very significant civil rights lawsuit. And that suit was brought by individuals representing historically black colleges and universities in this state. Because those universities had been historically underfunded, their programs duplicated, and they had been discriminated against by the state. And, you know, when I was looking and doing my research on this lawsuit, I said, why is the state defending this position? You know, the state has admitted in its own document that it underfunded HBCUs. The state was approached by the Office of Civil Rights back in, I think, in the 70s, and then again in 2000, because they had not desegregated higher education. We were still running a dual system of higher education in the state. And this was a significant issue. And the state decided, instead of doing what's right and being fair, they decided, well, we're just going to defend our position. And even in spite of the fact that now we have a ruling by the federal district court stating that the state of Maryland has violated both the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, and that the decision that it's made to run the school system of higher education lies in the face of the decision in Brown versus Board of Education in 1954. Despite all that, the state wants to defend its position that it's doing the right, that it's doing enough. And obviously, the federal district court found it. It was not.
Well, Delegate Braveboy, I want to ask you this question then.
Oh, sure.
Had you been Attorney General, what do you think your actions would have been? What do you think your advice to the state, the Department of Education, the Board of Regents would have been?
Well, it was actually the defendant was actually the Maryland Higher Education Commission.
Okay. Well, what position would you have taken as Attorney General?
Well, my counsel to the agency and to the governor would have been, we need to settle this lawsuit in a fair manner. We need to look at the issues that have been brought up by the plaintiffs, which all are legitimate issues, and step by step negotiate a fair and equitable resolution. What the state did was offered $40 million over 4 years to settle what was a $2.1 billion lawsuit. They offered no rationale for the amount that was proffered. They offered no, plan to provide for parity and equity for historically black college universities. And these are state institutions, so everyone has a right here, right? But these institutions have a right to be treated fairly. And I would have argued and counseled the governor to do the right thing and to come up with a fair and equitable solution. That was not done, and it was unfortunate because we have now a black eye in the state of Maryland, one that we could have avoided had we done the right thing.
Delegate Braveboy, please hang on. We're going to take a break here, and then we'll come back and talk some more, okay? Delegate Aisha Braveboy is one of three Democratic candidates for Attorney General here in Maryland in the June 24th primary. Back with more questions for her, my questions and yours. Your questions and comments are welcome for the delegate, 410-662-8780. What do you think I should ask Attorney General candidates when they come in here today? John Cardin will be here. Brian Frosch will be here. You get a chance to join me, assist me in asking questions of these candidates. A short break, and we'll come back and speak some more with Delegate Aisha Braveboy. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. We're spending some time with the Democratic candidates for Attorney General this hour and next in advance of the primary, June 24th. We'll be joined in a moment by Delegate John Cardin and then later by Senator Brian Frosch, both candidates. Right now, we continue our conversation with Delegate Aisha Braveboy, who hopes to become the Democratic nominee. Just to mention the Republican candidate so far, the unopposed Republican candidate, Jeffrey Pritzker, and we have a Libertarian candidate also, Leo Wayne Domowski. But in terms of the primary, and it's next Tuesday, among the Democrats, John Cardin, Brian Frosch, and our guest now, Aisha Braveboy. Do you have a thought to share with us about the administration of justice in Maryland? You mentioned juvenile justice a while ago about your involvement with that, but in general, questions have been raised about the bail system in Maryland, about the detention of people who are arrested on minor offenses and kept in jail maybe longer than they should be kept in jail. Yeah. That in particular, I just wonder if you have some recommendations you might be making to your own General Assembly that you'll be emerging from.
Absolutely. Now, we did a good job, I think, so far in trying to, address the issue of mass incarceration, especially as it relates to, the possession of small amounts of marijuana. And, as chair of the Legislative Black Caucus, I led that fight on the House floor because the truth was that the House Judiciary Committee was going to, create a task force to study the issue of, whether or not we should incarcerate people for having small amounts of marijuana, or criminalize them, for having small amounts of marijuana. And I said, absolutely not. We're going to pass a bill to decriminalize marijuana this year. And I was willing to step up and go against the House Judiciary Committee to get it done. And we were successful. So that was a good thing. But we still have a lot of issues. You mentioned bail reform. The state obviously was found by the Court of Appeals to really be denying defendants the right to counsel at these bail hearings because their liberty is at stake. And any point in which your liberty is at stake, you know, I think as an individual, you should be represented by counsel. What the state did was the governor wanted to do is create this system where you would use a tool, essentially a computer program to determine whether or not someone should be released or someone should be detained. That's a huge mistake because there's no other state in the country that can use any tool for administrative release. The tool is used, these computer programs are used to inform courts in other states, to inform the judge so that the judge can make a decision based on some objective criteria and then can use their own judgment, you know, at the end of the day to determine whether or not someone should be released or should be detained. But one of the issues is that our courts are not open and available to defendants around the clock. So one of the reforms that I would propose is that we adopt a system similar to the District of Columbia, which had a 24/7 court, so that there's a judge available at all times, so defendants aren't necessarily, you know, held up by our commissioner system, which is old, it's antiquated, it's outdated. We really need to reform that system so that, you know, a judge is available for a defendant at every point in the process.
Do you think there is a role for court commissioners?
You know, I think there is a role for court commissioners because, remember, not only are the court commissioners used at the bail review, but when an individual wants to report a crime, wants to, you know, get a protective order, things like that, they can go see a court commissioner. And I think that is an appropriate use of those individuals who are serving our state. But when it comes to a matter of liberty, whether or not you are going to be able to be released, or whether or not you're going to be held and confined by the state, I believe that decision should be made by a judge.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines to take a question for Delegate Aisha Bray-Boyd, candidate for Attorney General. Melissa in Mount Washington, you're on Midday. Please go right ahead with your question.
Yes, I had a question for Delegate Bray-Boyd about, I understand that, it is my understanding that you were involved in efforts to block legislation or block the vote for marriage equality. And I was just curious about, you know, where you were coming from with your actions and your views on equality for, you know, lesbian, gay, and transgender persons.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Let me just say this. The amendment I proposed was to take the issue straight to the voters because people on both sides of the issue, whether you're for marriage equality or against it, understood and knew that the issue would go to the voters. So my amendment would have taken it straight to the voters. I have always supported our transgender community. I've voted every time we've had a bill on the floor regarding, providing rights to our transgender community. I've voted in support of it. And, you know, in my private practice, again, I do represent clients on a pro bono basis. And I'm proud to say that one of my pro bono clients is a same-sex couple who were facing a housing discrimination that I was successfully able to keep them in together as a unit, as a family. So I've done work and I've supported legislation on behalf of the LGBT community.
So, Delegate Bray-Boyd, did you support same-sex marriage in Maryland?
I did not vote for it. Vote for the legislation when it was in the House of Delegates because I believe that we should have sent the question straight to the voters as people on both sides.
I see. You felt it should have been a referendum question and not up to the legislature?
I felt that, the question was going to go to referendum anyway. People on both sides knew that. And so the question for us, I believe, was do we give it straight to the voters so that the voters can make a decision?
Okay. Where were you personally on it? You must have had a personal view on it. Were you opposed?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I've stated, you know, when I spend my time on a pro bono basis to help clients, it's because it's something I believe in. And so because I helped, you know, a same-sex couple, I think that the answer is clear. I support them. I support their rights. I fought for their rights. and I would continue to do that as Attorney General.
Let me ask you this. If you were elected to this post, would be replacing Doug Gansler. Douglas Gansler has been Attorney General since 2006, I believe he was elected. What do you think of the job he's done? What do you think of Doug Gansler's tenure as Attorney General in Maryland?
I think he's done a pretty good job. I really do. I think he's been good on the environment, and I want to continue a lot of his efforts to get polluters out of Maryland, to hold businesses accountable for bringing toxins into our communities. I mean, I think he has done a wonderful, wonderful job in many respects. Where I think that we need the office though needs more independence. And you need an attorney general who's willing to sometimes tell the governor and the legislature no. And let me give you an example. You know, when we went through the whole process of redistricting, in many respects, though it was supposed to be quote-unquote transparent and the governor appointed a commission, the commission went all around the state. They went all around the state with 10-year-old Matt. And I went to a lot of those meetings. And the people in the audience were saying, we know that you all have come up with some proposed maps. We want to see those maps, not the ones that are currently in existence. And it did not give the people of the state of Maryland a fair opportunity to really give input on this very important process that affects their voting rights. And it was absolutely wrong. And instead of allowing that process to play out as it did, I would have counseled the governor to say, look, let's give the citizens an opportunity to weigh in on the map that we are proposing. Let's go all over the state with those maps, not the maps that were from 10 years ago, because it was disingenuous, and the public knew it. And so that was a huge, huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the issue of the bail review, I mean, the governor just wanted, he didn't agree with the Court of Appeals decision, and so he refused to fully fund the public defender's office or fully fund the court, you know, and so he refused to really deal with the underlying issue in the Wolf case, which was really unfortunate. And as the Attorney General, sometimes you have to come out and say, look, mm-hmm. it's not about what you want. It's about what the people deserve. And I respect our Court of Appeals. You know, I respect those judges. You know, they're there to serve the public, too. And when they make a decision, we can't just say we don't like it, and therefore, you know, we want to act defiant. Sometimes we just have to, you know, you have to comply with the rule of law. And that's something that I would bring to the Attorney General's office. Independence, again, people before partisan politics and parties, and really a desire to serve and deliver justice to the people of the state of Maryland.
Because it's very interesting what you have to say there. Of course, the Attorney General serves as legal counsel to the governor, but of course, the governor is not required to accept your counsel.
Absolutely. But you know, the Attorney General, you know, and it's interesting because people say, well, you know, don't you have to do this? Don't you have to do it? Don't you have to defend the governor's position? Well, if the Attorney General only represented the interests of the governor, then the Attorney General's office would not need to be an elected office, to be appointed by the governor so that the governor can give counsel that he wants. Or whatever position he holds on a subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
But the Attorney General is elected independently, and their first charge is to represent the interests of the people. And sometimes, hopefully not too many times, sometimes that may be at odds with the interests of other elected officials.
We'll leave it on that note, unless you'd like to have maybe one more minute to address the voters.
Well, I just really thank the voters for voting during the early voting season, and I look forward to seeing a huge voter turnout on Election Day. And I just want to say one thing to the people of Baltimore. You know, there has been a lot of concerns in Baltimore about, you know, police brutality and undue and unnecessary force. And as the next Attorney General, I am going to institute a training program four police officers in constitutional policing. It is really a problem in our state when the citizens feel that our police are not acting in a constitutional and fair manner when confronting citizens in the state. Everyone has the presumption of innocence. And in Baltimore City, far too many of our young, and especially our young African-American men, are being killed unnecessarily at the hands of police. That's something that cannot continue in this state.
Delegate Braveboy, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Aisha Braveboy is a Democratic candidate for Attorney General of Maryland in the Maryland primary election, Election Day, June 24th. We'll take another break here on Midday Candidates Week, devoting both of today's show to the Democratic primary for Attorney General. John Cardin, delegate from Baltimore County, the 11th District, will be joining us next. He is also a candidate for that position. A short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. It's Candidates Week on WYPR. On Midday today, we're devoting both hours of our show to the Democratic primary for Attorney General. Joining us now is Delegate John Cardin, who represents Maryland's 11th District, that is Baltimore County. He's been in the state legislature for 12 years, am I right?
12 years, that's correct.
John Cardin, nice to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks, Dan.
So I always start with a little biography here with all of our candidates. I asked Aisha Braveboy for her background. So, you know, where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school?
And
around Baltimore, school means, you know,
sure.
Elementary school forward. But you don't have to give us all of that.
Because you're not from around here. We know that from your accent.
Right.
I'm born and bred in Baltimore City. I now represent the county. I've been representing the county for 12 years. I grew up in Mount Washington. I went to Park School. Mm-hmm. Many people know Park. My brother went to Poly. My father went to City. So we have the City Poly rivalry also in my family. I have a law practice in Baltimore City right around the corner from the courthouse. And I've been
Where'd you get your undergraduate degree and your law school degree?
I went to Tufts University undergraduate, got a master's in public policy from UMBC. And a master's in Judaic studies from Baltimore Hebrew University, which is now Towson University. And I got my law degree with honors from University of Maryland.
Hmm. So, it sounds like you had something else in mind besides the law first?
I originally went actually and worked on Capitol Hill for a nonprofit that did legislative process seminars and helped lobbying and advocating for up-and-coming democracies like Namibia, and other southern African countries, as a matter of fact. It was coincidental. We also had a lot of research on Cold War-type policies, brought them back to help with the Department of Defense. And I really enjoyed being on Capitol Hill. I actually got recruited to work in a congressional office and decided that the only way I could actually make a living doing that was to go to law school. Mm-hmm. Fell in love with the law, clerked for a judge for a year, and then right out of my clerkship, I decided to run for office while I opened up my own law practice.
So what has your practice been like all these years? Before we get into the politics and
sure.
your service as a House of Delegate in the House of Delegates, what has your law practice been like?
Sure. I spend most of my time in the Baltimore region, and coincidentally, I'm the only person running for statewide office from outside of the Washington region and from inside Baltimore. I think it's an interesting statistic. It's not. I love my brothers and sisters from Montgomery and Prince George's County, but you know, Baltimore will lose its diversity of perspective if there's no Baltimore person at the table. My practice focuses on criminal defense. I do some civil litigation. I do some probate. I have a lot of contract law. And I work with two other lawyers, and they basically give me anything that they can't handle. All the personal injury stuff I give to one of my partners, and the workers' comp. I did a little bit of workers' comp, but I've really kind of been focusing more on criminal defense and contract work.
Now, we know you're from a political family, but put that aside for a moment, and I wonder about two things. First, how did you come to decide you were going to be a Democrat? I mean, you're born into it, you just accepted it, or did you think about it?
We spent every Friday night, my family, my extended family sits around the table. For those of you who watch Blue Bloods, I happen to have just seen the show. It always ends with the family, the extended family around the table. I feel like that's the way we are, and we talk politics. We always have. My grandfather was served in the House of Delegates in the 30s and the 40s, really kind of help me, along with my schooling, help define sort of who I am and what principles I stand for. I consider myself an unapologetic Democrat, but I also consider myself open-minded and always wanting to justify answers and understand unintended consequences. I think that comes from a lot of that family dynamic that we have. My Uncle Ben and I don't agree on everything, but we agree on many things. And then, for example, we didn't agree on expanded gaming. We had a discussion about it, and we came out on opposite sides.
Where did you come out on that? Slots, you mean?
I voted in favor of it. I actually wrote a piece in the Baltimore Sun and the Washington Post, which was in the Sunday opinion sections back then, back in 2005, which said we shouldn't be talking about slots, we should be talking about casinos, because if we're going to talk about it, let's actually talk about what we're talking about. Slots seem to hide the ball. And there are some unintended consequences and some negative issues that come out of expanded gaming. We know that. Mm. The question is, what's the best policy for the state of Maryland, and how do we fund the necessary programs that we need to fund?
What made you decide to actually run for office and not become a prosperous attorney?
When I had my master's in public policy, I was a school teacher. I taught Spanish right out of college for a few years while I was gearing up to get my master's degree. And I really enjoyed the didactic teaching aspect. I enjoyed the public policy, very much enjoyed the community public interest that I had in my Jewish communal service degree that I got in Judaic studies, and learned that and then of course the law degree, and tried to figure out how I'm going to bring them all together, and decided that running for office was the best way that I could realize my potential and do the most for the community. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I thought I knew from being from a political family.
What did you get yourself into?
Well, I mean,
what would you say about it now, 12 years later?
It has been tremendously enjoyable. It is a difficult struggle to balance a full-time law practice, a citizen legislature where you're supposed to be working part-time, but you're actually working full-time, and then a family. And what I have really enjoyed is the constituent relations issue, solving people's problems. People come to me and say, we need help with getting in touch with the insurance commissioner because we had problems when Hurricane Isabel came or something to that nature. And actually solving problems while also dealing with important pieces of legislation. As chairman of the Election Law Subcommittee, I've been focusing the last 8 years on the civil rights and the voting rights of Marylanders and making sure that everybody has fair and free and protected elections. I am the only chairman of a subcommittee on election law, and have really enjoyed having that under my belt and understanding that and really defending the
rights. Since you brought that up, let me ask you something. What would you say about our election security as we approach this election? Actually, it's already started now with early voting. There's some questions raised about whether our system, especially for absentee voting, is secure.
So we have tried to create the most convenient and transparent system while also maintaining security and confidence in the system. And it has been a balance because many people come to us and say, why aren't we voting online and making it really convenient? But there are security issues, not only with privacy, which is a constitutional right, but also with making sure that people can't manipulate through malicious code or other means through very sophisticated hacking systems. What we have done in the last few years is we have moved towards an online ballot marking device, particularly for overseas voters. It has been determined to not be effective or not able to be certified for non-overseas voters for this election, even though we passed legislation to allow it. I think it's a good thing that the State Board of Elections decided we're not ready there with the security issues. And I think that that's a good sign of the system working, saying, wait a minute, for overseas voters, we've used this system before, we're ready to do it, and we can do it. But to expand it to everybody in the entire state, we still need to secure and make sure that this system is certified and works right before there's manipulation.
So as we go into this election, and some have already voted, as I said, you're confident that it's a secure system?
We have not had any problems, and I think our state board has done a very good job of making sure that won't happen.
The issue came up, the Baltimore Sun reported about your voting record this year on the House Ways and Means Committee, the high number of votes that you missed on that committee. Have you had that problem in previous years? I didn't have a chance to look up your voting record. So in previous years, did you have this kind of absenteeism?
Sure. And we've been through this before, and I appreciate
Please,
the question.
Once and for all, go for it.
Sure. I have a greater than 90% voting attendance record over the course of my of my career, my 12-year career. This session in particular, my wife was going through a rocky first trimester of pregnancy. I am thrilled to say that she's doing fine. But I made a commitment to my family as a working parent. I strive to balance between my work that I have to get done and my family's health needs. I got 100% of the work done. People are alleging that I was not showing up at work, and that's just not true. What I would say is that I get to Annapolis at 6:30 every morning. My colleagues, both the colleagues who you're having on the show today and every other colleague, sees me there every single day. And late night, I would leave 2 days a week to handle matters at home, whether it be doctor's appointments or other matters that dealing with.
And these votes were at night, these committee
votes? All these votes happened either late in the afternoon around 5 o'clock or at 6 o'clock. They were generally scheduled earlier, but because of delays in the system and legislative time, which always seems to rode on. And my chairman knew that at a certain point that I would leave. And she knew that I had to leave for personal reasons. In fact, she was, my parents don't like to know this, but she was the only person who knew that my wife was pregnant. My wife's parents, my parents didn't even know. And my chairman did. So those are the kinds of, what I'd like to say is that I want to focus on the issues.
I want to get this out of the way, but I want to ask you this.
None of these votes.
Did you learn anything from this?
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure this comes up as you go out and campaign. People must ask you this question, and I've written about it. You know, I've written about it in my column.
Sure.
So, I mean, would you say you've learned anything from this episode?
Absolutely. Look, I have. When you're running for statewide office, you have to be careful about all your actions. What do I regret about this? I regret that I don't have 26 hours in the day. But I don't regret the fact that the safety of my family is an important value, and I will continue to make sure that I take care of my job in the office, and political theater shouldn't be part of that. The fact is that these were all unanimous votes, and everybody knew that these were not important. In my committee, Ways and Means, we do not debate votes during our voting sessions. They take minutes to do these voting sessions. I missed 9 of them. 6 of them were for personal reasons. 3 of them were because it was late on a Friday afternoon, and I go home to celebrate the Sabbath with my family. I missed 9 voting sessions. I took over 2,700 votes total during the legislative session when you include all the procedural votes, all the concurrence calendars, all the conference committee reports. We're talking about 119 votes. So,
the Attorney General of Maryland represents the state in all legal proceedings. The Attorney General serves as legal counsel to the governor, the legislature, all the state departments, boards, and most commissions. It pays a salary of $137,500. They have 723 staff positions. That includes full-time attorneys, contract attorneys, and support staff. So this is a big office, lots of responsibility.
Maybe I'll have you come around the state with me and describe it, because a lot of people don't know what the Attorney General's office does.
That's why I'm relating these facts here.
Yeah.
So then the question is why? Why are you running for Attorney General?
I've spent my career in public service and as a lawyer solving people's problems. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy making people whole and trying to make our corner of the world, Maryland, which I've grown up in and I have lived in for 44 years, except my time away in college and the like, make it the greatest place it can be. I got into politics because of the environment. I have a 97% voting record on environmental issues. But when I learned, what I realized when I got into the legislature is that there are so many issues that we can be dealing with, and we deal with them on the margins in the legislature. As Attorney General, you are there to make sure you're not a legislator. You're there to make sure you're protecting the rights of the citizens of the state and that you are enforcing the laws. And if the state has an issue it needs to deal with, they need legal counsel, you are there to deal with every single agency, every single board, and every single consumer who's a member of our state. And I am inspired by the fact that I can actually use my skill set and hopefully make Maryland a better place for every Marylander, a safer place. And every Marylander should be treated with dignity and respect and equality and fairness. And it's been my motto. It's been my campaign platform. And it's been the person I have been as a legislator and a lawyer for the last 15 years.
Can you define what a proactive attorney general would be versus, say, the attorney general that just does the job? He's asked for an opinion, he provides an opinion, enforces the law, makes sure all the divisions are running well. Right, but what's a proactive attorney general?
So a proactive attorney—I guess it's a rhetorical question, says because
it is sort of
a proactive attorney general will be somebody who reaches out and says, "This is a harm. This is an issue that needs to be solved that hasn't come to me, but I need to go to it." I'll give you an example of the places and the times that I would be proactive. We want to have a clean bay for many reasons. Not just for the intrinsic value of the bay, not just for the economic ability for the bay to provide what it has provided for centuries, not just because we want it to be a recreational center and we need to make sure we maintain our port and all of the aspects that the longshore fishermen want to deal with. But we also need to have a clean bay because it defines Maryland. The largest polluter, both point source and non-point source polluter, for those lawyers out there, you understand that you're talking about directed specific in the law and regulations pollution and other pollution that's not necessarily defined. Pennsylvania, the Susquehanna River, is the largest pollutant. We need to make sure that while we are forcing our companies, our businesses, our individuals to do the best job they can here in the state of Maryland, we need to make sure that other folks that don't necessarily feel the consequences of it are also dealing with it. So that's a proactive attorney general.
Have you thought about how you go about that?
Well, I watched our present attorney general, who went after some energy companies energy producing companies in the Tennessee Valley in Ohio, and got a major settlement. It's not just about creating a Supreme Court case. It's about mediating a solution that provides better actions and changes behaviors. We got a few $1 million settlement from just one company. We can go after companies individually as we learn that they're polluting inappropriately. We can talk to the state about negotiating some sort of settlement that creates an injunctive relief of spewing chemicals.
Well, they're supposed to be our partner, Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, in our Chesapeake Watershed Agreement.
Well, I think one of my skills is my ability to negotiate and understand that when I'm on the right side, I will be a strong, tough negotiator. We also, my environmental platform is really about three aspects: education, mediation, litigation. We have to educate our businesses and individuals about how to comply with the law. If they are trying, we need to mediate a quick solution. And if they don't comply and they're bad actors, we're going after them. And you know what? We're going to win.
State Delegate John Cardin is our guest in this hour of midday. He's going to stay with us through the lunch and the brief break that we take for the news from NPR. And then into the second hour of midday, he'll be with us for another segment of our show. And you're invited to call in with comments or questions at 410-662-8780. Okay, so Delegate Cardin, you stay right here in Studio A or go out and grab a sandwich. We have a lunch today brought to us by, a new provider, Apples and Oranges Fresh Market, offering freshly prepared breakfast, lunch, and dinner options. Its catering menu includes deli and sandwich platters, fresh fruit and cheese plates, and desserts. Apples and Oranges Fresh Market is open daily and located at 1900 North Broadway, right here in Baltimore. More information, visit applesandorangesmarket.com. We thank Apples and Oranges for providing lunch for our guests now each Wednesday. And Breathe Bookstore Cafe moves to Thursdays for Thursday lunch. Okay, folks, please stay tuned for the second hour of our show. More with John Cardin and then State Senator Brian Frosch, also a candidate for Attorney General in next Tuesday's primary, will be joining us. So please hang on if you have a question for John Cardin or Senator Frosch. Coming up in the second hour of our show, we can also take questions by email. Don't forget that. It's midday@wypr.org. Please stay tuned for the news. We'll see you in a few minutes.